So first of all, where did you come across the idea of 2012?
Well, that was back in about 1981 when I read The Cosmic Trigger, Final Secret of the Illuminati, a book by Robert Anton Wilson, in which he summarised a book by Terence and Dennis McKenna called The Invisible Landscape. It was about a 10-page summary, if I remember rightly, which really caught my fascination. So I then tried to get hold of The Invisible Landscape, and it took me 10 months to get hold of the book through the library. I couldn't get it from any bookshops or anything because it was out of print. It was a book that came out in 1975 originally, and the library let me have it for a month, and for one week rather. I photocopied the book and then was studying it for several years. But basically, McKenna and his brother, through experiments with hallucinogenic brew down in the Ecuador rainforest, they were told by these what they call insectoid anthropologists from the future that everything that is in the universe is encoded into the ancient Chinese oracle, the I Ching. So Terence took it upon himself to try and decode the I Ching, and he went back and used what was then quite a complex computer in the university with the help of a couple of mathematicians. He basically took all the mathematics out of the King Wen sequence of the I Ching, which is six line structures and 64 of them, 384 lines in all, and he ended up with a wave which showed all the change in the universe from the beginning of time to the end of time. And then once he'd worked out where we were on the wave, he then realised that the wave hits the baseline, which means maximum novelty, things accelerating to a situation where there's huge breakthroughs, evolutionary breakthroughs happening faster and faster and faster until it all climaxes in 1 second. And then that came out as the 17th of November 2012. And he knew nothing about any of these other 2012 connections, Maya calendars or anything when he came up with this theory.
There are a number of other theories, many other theories that all point to the same date, but yeah, all of them are independent. None of them are linked with each other. Right?
That's right. I mean, a lot of people presume that McKenna knew about the Maya calendar first, but he didn't, because if he had known about it, he would have done what he did later when he found out about it, which was to shift his endpoint forwards to coincide with the Maya calendar, because in the 1993 edition of his book, he basically shifted the endpoint to coincide with the Maya calendar, because in the interim he'd found out about the Maya calendar.
I see.
So you've got what he showed was a lunar calendar from China, which is over 4,000 years old, and a solar calendar from Mesoamerica on the other side of the world, and that's at least 2,100, probably 2,500 years old or more, and they both end within 34 days of each other in 2012.
Well, having come across these different ideas that point to the date of 2012, something significant happening, what inspired you to research it further and write a book? I mean, why was this significant to you, more so significant than Nostradamus or any other end date prediction or anything else? Yet?
Well, basically, all the other apocalyptic dates, doom dates and that kind of thing that had been put forward before were almost exclusively all based on one source, which is the Bible. The new thing about this was it came from two different sources from opposite sides of the world, both pointing to the same point in time. That's what really caught my imagination, because the Bible, I mean, yes, it's been, you can use the Bible to prove anything. So basically what I did, I then had to try and find someone to talk to about it. So I started doing the research, going into bookshops, looking through indexes, trying to find out anything I could about this subject, collecting the information and then compacting it into paragraphs with little pictures and doing printouts. And I joined a crop circle group, actually, because here was a bunch of people who were broad-minded enough that they could have a conversation about this. And I just started handing these things out and to find out if, you know, I wanted more feedback from people. Whether, do you know anything about this, you know? And so then I did a talk for the Crop Circle group, and it went on from there with doing talks. And then basically when I put the website together in 2000, then I started getting feedback from all over the world, from people who had altered states of consciousness or who had come across other prophecies or myths. And so, yeah, the database started to build.
Well, what Mayan inscriptions are there? I understand we have the calendar with the long count, and it's, and the calendar actually ends on 2012. Is there anything, are there any actual inscriptions that say the world will end or we will have a change? Is there anything specific in text?
Yeah, that's a good question, and one of my favourites. Because time I wrote Beyond 2012, there was, according to most archaeologists and anthropologists you spoke to, there's nothing in the inscriptions. Basically, there is something, but hardly anybody knew about it. And this all came out in April 2006, when one of these anthropologists, Robert Sittler, was writing an article for a university website. He was on the website, and people started discussing this article. And in it, he was saying that the indigenous Maya people are very upset that that their cultural artifact, the calendar, something they thought they should be consulted about, and that's what they saw that the New Age researchers are talking about their calendar and going around doing conferences, and they thought, you know, writing books, and they thought making money, and it should be them. Which is fair comment. I mean, because the here are the people that have been performing genocide on them for the last 500 years, and still are in some places. So it seemed very unfair. But so that's one thing that Sittler brought up. And then the other thing he said was, and anyway, there's nothing in the inscriptions that shows that the ancient Maya were at all interested in 2012. So anyway, I took him to task on that, because I'd just been looking into the Chilambalan prophecies, which are post-conquest documents, because when Delanda came to invade, he basically made a bonfire of all the codices he could find, leaving only four. And one of them may be a forgery. So and they're quite damaged now. The Dresden is about the best condition one.
Is this done on paper?
A codex is made from the bark of a tree, a bark book. So it's light paper, a bit like papyrus actually. What the Mayans have told us about these Chilambalan books is that they are, the prophecies in them are about something that's all over and done with 500 years ago, because they're mainly Katun prophecies, which is about, see, when the, at the end of the classic era in 900 AD, when the Maya abandoned their cities and moved into the lowlands, they lost the long count. They abandoned that and they started using a calendar that's 20 times shorter, called the short count, which instead of consisting of 13 Bactons, 13 400 year cycles, it's 13 Katuns, which is around 156 years in total. So that it seemed that all the prophecies that were associated with those 13 Katun cycle, the short count, were all over and done with, because it's such a short cycle. But according to one of these books that I'd been looking at, which is not an easy book to find, the Chilambalam of Tizimin, translated by Maud McKempson, she'd found some solid linguistic evidence that some of those prophecies had originally applied to the end of the long count calendar. They'd retained the prophecies, junked the calendar, and applied the prophecies to the end of the much shorter calendar, the 13 Katun cycle. So if you take those prophecies, they are basically originally were about 2012. That is the implication. So I told Sittler about this, and he was sufficiently interested to ask some questions on a discussion group of Mayanists, which was the Aztlan discussion group, and then that got passed through to another discussion group called UT Mesoamerica, that's University of Texas discussion group. A little group of epigraphers on there, all talking about ancient inscriptions of the Maya. And One of these is Dave Stewart, one of the world's top epigraphers, and this time Sittler had asked before, but only vaguely. This time he asked a direct question: is there any inscription of the Maya from the classic period that it mentions the end of the third embactin cycle in particular, 2012 in other words? And so David Stewart came back and said, actually there is one inscription, and it's what I'll be talking about later. It's on a monument called Monument 6 from a place called Tortuguero, which is in Tabasco region of Mexico, not that far from Palenque. And what it says, I mean, this is originally a huge T-shaped monument. The left-hand wing is missing, they've never found it. The rest of it's been cracked up and it's in various people's different hands. Some of it's in the local museum. Two parts are in the hands of a collector they've lost track of who that is. One bit's in the American museum. But the right-hand wing of it, where the inscription ends, it says, at the end of the period of the 13th Bactan on Forahau 3 Cancan, that's three calendars cross-referencing one date, which is 21st December 2012, then it will happen. There'll be darkness and the Bolognoctiku will descend to the Bolognoctiku are the nine support gods, or there's various other names for them, nine dog tree, or the god of nine steps, nine-footed god. It's basically a group of nine gods that are also seen as one god collectively. But we can't.
Supporters of the world or something?
Well, I don't know why they call them the nine support gods. Having looked into who they are, it's just one of those, seems to be one of those Mayan terms that have been used. I haven't really worked out why they've used that term yet. But they were present at the last creation, and they'll be present at the next creation. But basically it's saying that these nine gods are going to return. You can't quite finish the sentence because there's damage to the last glyph. But some of those things, that there will be darkness and the return of nine gods in 2012, the end of the third embactin cycle, those are basically what I just found in the Chilambalams and told Sittler about. So it seemed to be confirmation of what I just found out in the Chilambalam, so that really impressed me.
So it's confirmation of something, but it doesn't say the end of the world.
Oh no. That's the only thing we've got in an inscription form, and it's supported by what we have in the post-classic Chilambalam. So what you have also is in the Popol Vuh myth. This is something that they now goes way back to the beginning of Maya civilization, but that again was only actually written down, well, we've only got records of it that are written down in post-conquest times, but they now know from inscriptions at places like Itzapa that the myth goes way back. And this describes various past eras. I mean, it's very obscure, this myth, to the extent that people can't even agree on how many eras are represented there. Some, on a basic level, it seems like three. Some people have said four, and Gordon Brotherston, who's a professor, he says that there's five eras represented there, which would make it equivalent to the eras of the Aztecs, for example, or the Zuzuzhil Maya, who a group that still exists today and have their own mythology about five eras. But each era, it seems that each era, mankind is done away with and replaced by a better model.
Okay, so the end of the last, so we're in the fifth sun now, right?
According to the Aztecs version, we're in the fifth, and according to Brotherston's version of the Popol Vuh, we're in the fifth, and the Zuzuzhil Maya, we're also in the fifth.
So, but, so what happened at the end of the last, Mayan, long count, the last age, at the end of the fourth, there was a big cataclysm, like a flood or something like this?
Well, yeah, there's more. It is very similar to that. Yeah, I mean, it's hard to piece it together from the Popol Vuh, but if you go to the see, all this was probably in those documents that they made a big bonfire of, but if you go to the remaining Aztec documents, they cross-reference what's at the centre of the Aztec sunstone, that there were previous eras that ended, that were, well, they were named after their last, well, they were named after one of the day signs, which corresponds to the method by which they were ended, which does sound fairly catastrophic, because you've got a, the wind god is one that represents one of these, that represents an era that ended with hurricanes, and then you've got a jaguar, which represents, according to Brotherston, that represents an era that was ended by eclipse, when they thought that monsters came down and ate people. Then you've got one represented by rain, which is a rain of fire, so that's probably volcanic lava and volcanic ash. And then you've got water, which represents flooding. So you've got those methods of all the past eras ending, and the current one in the middle is represented by the sun god Tonatiuh, who's shown with human hearts in each hand, because that's who they sacrificed to in order to stop this current world from ending. But the archaeological interpretation is that the current era is called earthquake, because the whole of those five central eras are encapsulated within the sign Olin, which means movement or earthquake.
So it would imply great movement of the earth and maybe the sun exploding at the same time?
You could interpret it like that. But the thing is, we've got to remember, is that the Aztecs were living in quite a zone where there's a lot of earthquakes and volcanic activity, so it could be, a localised...
Well, do we have to take their prophecy seriously? I mean, okay, so we can tell from their calendar when the end of the last fourth sun was and when the end of the fifth world was. Do we have geological evidence to back up a kind of cataclysmic scenario at those times?
There is actually some ice core evidence. I think it's from a mountain in Tanzania, mainly. Lonnie Thompson is the man who's done the ice cores. And he's found that there was a worldwide climate change. It's called the Piura Oscillation, around about 3100 BC, when this current era started, according to that long count calendar, yeah.
I see. So where did they get this calendar from? I mean, how did they come up with this? Why did they settle on this?
Well, they think it was developed by the Olmecs, who are the older civilization, and possibly in the town of Itzapa. There's some agreement among... the trouble with this whole field is nobody agrees with each other, so it's hard to make any definitive statements about anything, you know. But it does seem that quite likely that the Olmecs developed the calendar in Itzapa, which is a town on the Pacific coast just on the borders of Guatemala and Mexico, and that the Maya inhabited that town later, and that they took that calendar over there. There's no inscriptions at Zarpa, though, to help us out, but there are, there's no glyph inscriptions, but there are inscriptions from the Popol Vuh myth, and John Major Jenkins has made much of those in his ascertaining that the reason for ending that Thurning-Bacton cycle in 2012 is because there's going to be this... conjunction of the winter solstice sun with the galactic equator, which he calls galactic alignment.
So what does that mean for us? If we see this sun going through the galactic alignment, what does that mean?
Well, again, there's a big different opinion here. There's circumstantial evidence that there may be some side effect from that actual alignment. First of all, we have to take into account that astronomically speaking, well, because another thing is, at the moment, what would the media getting hold of this, and the big, especially as there's this big Hollywood film coming out in November, everyone's starting to get on the gravy train here, and the media actually are only interested in one headline, and that is the world's going to end in 2012. Whatever you say, that's what they twist it into. And so the archaeologists do not really want to be involved in that, and yet they keep asking them. So they've only got one choice, and that's to rubbish the whole subject. That's one. So what? Some of the things that they bring up in order to diss this subject are interesting points, but it can be quite complex to get into them. But basically, one thing they say is that the centre of the galaxy, astronomically, is not something that is being eclipsed by the winter solstice sun in 2012, and that's because the sun will be closer to that in a few hundred years' time, because it's just off that crossing of the ecliptic and the galactic equator. But that's not what Jenkins is saying. He's saying that that is the visible centre of the galaxy, the big bulge at the centre of the galaxy with the dark rift, which the Maya saw as the crocodile's mouth or the mouth of the jaguar toad. And they depicted the sun being reborn in that as the sun god Wanhunapu stuck in the mouth of this toad, jaguar, snake, whatever it, the animal is that they represent it with. That seems to represent this alignment. If you accept that, that it's not talking about astronomical galactic centre, which is only visible with a radio telescope anyway, you know, they were visual astronomers. They didn't have radio telescopes, obviously, but if you accept that it's the galactic equator, the visible line you draw down the galaxy and where the ecliptic, the passage of the sun and the planets crosses that, that that point is where the sun sits in 2012, then the next thing to bring up is, okay, precession goes at the rate of, because that's what we're talking about here, the precession of the equinoxes, that goes at the rate of 72 years for 1 degree. So if you take the time, it takes, the sun is half a degree wide, so it takes 36 years for it to, from touching one side of the galactic equator to cross it until it's touching the other side. That's a 36-year time window in which this conjunction takes place. The centre of that is 1998, started in 1980, goes on to 2016. So the centre point being 1998, the next question is, all right, why didn't the Maya target this date for 1998, which is the centre of this whole galactic alignment process? And that's a very good question. There's probably three answers to that. The most obvious one, which the Mayanists are trying to insinuate, is that that it's irrelevant. That it's, but basically, that in other words, because there's a 14-year error, everybody's got it wrong, and the Maya weren't targeting that. The second is that because it was visual astronomy, they may have made a miscalculation by 14 years. I've got my own reasons, for, which I can go into in a moment, for not really going with either of those two. I think it's possible that either in 1998, at the centre point of this process, something kicked off, which then builds up to a crescendo in 2012, which the Maya foresaw. You know, so at the centre point, something starts to build till it hits a crescendo, and then something happens in 2012, and they shamanically foresaw that. That's one possibility. Or the other one is that they are using the galactic alignment as a sort of celestial clock, a time window, in order to position this in time, in space-time, but that the end of their calendar actually pinpointed the moment during that time window, because, again, they shamanically foreseen possibly something else happening at that time, something else that happens in that time window. So the reasons why I don't really go for the two easy explanations that is because a lot of people have been coming back recently from altered states of consciousness, talking about 2012 when they knew nothing about it beforehand. That's near-death experiences, out-of-body experiences, remote viewers, deep trance meditation people have had sacred plant experiences, and even lucid dreamers. All these people have come back talking about 2012, and I've spoken to many of them, and they've you know, it's been a surprise to them, especially when they found out that there's all this talk about it building up anyway.
So there are a lot of people all around the world, and a lot of traditions and a lot of prophecies that will point to this date. Now, are they all talking about cataclysm? Is that what we're expecting here? Is that what you're expecting?
No, actually, when you, I've taken a look at all these theories people have come up with, and of course, the myths. There's a very good illustration of this in the Maori myth, in which they say that at the dawn of creation, the sun, the earth and the sky were in a close embrace. And as a result of that, they had three children, three gods that pushed their parents apart, and that's why the sky is up there and the earth is down here. The second part of that myth says that one day, when the children of the war god, that's their name for mankind, when we are no longer taking any notice of the old myths anymore, that's when their parents will take that moment to come crashing back together in a process called Kahinga Te Arai. In the Maori language, that means the curtain will fall. So this sounds on surface level like bad news. It sounds like it's the end of the play and it's all over. But in fact, one of the younger Maoris asked the elders about this, and it transpired two of those words in the phrase had mutated over the years. The word for curtain was originally veil, and the word for fall was originally dissolve. So it should be, the veil will dissolve. And they have said this is happening in 2012. And the word veil is the word they use for the veil between life and death.
And so what does that mean for us then? That means presumably, rather than a straight, you know, nuts and bolts cataclysm, we've got some sort of dissolving boundaries and actually...
Exactly.
And actually we're going to kind of open up to a new dimension or something.
That's like what that. I think. And it could be... I mean, it could be a personal cataclysm for people who are not prepared for it, if you like, mentally. Because I think it's a huge shift of consciousness. And that for those who've got a lot of bottled up stuff, see, there's some evidence that we have, you know, all those altered states of consciousness have one thing in common, and that's dimethyltryptamine. Because Rick Strassman's work, as you know, he's found that at birth, death, and during mystical experiences, which covers all those altered states, the pineal gland produces its own supply of dimethyltryptamine, with the exception of the sacred plants, because then you're taking it in from outside. So it seems that molecule somehow has given these people, including the Maya, because they also had access to that molecule in the form of the toad venom and a modified version of it in the magic mushroom they took. So, and McKenna, who had that same mushroom in combination with the ayahuasca vine to give him the vision that gave him the 2012 information from the I Ching. The DMT molecule is produced internally, and there's some evidence that movements of the Earth's magnetic field can, probably because of the fact that we have crystals of magnetite in the pineal gland, can set off an internal secretion of this chemical. And some scientists are now saying we're in the beginnings of geomagnetic reversal. So just say, for example, that there was a huge solar storm in 2012 and a big movement of the Earth's field that could cause a lot of people to start hallucinating. If they've got a lot of buried material, as in schizophrenics, that's the first thing that comes up and confronts them visually, their own repressed complexes and shadow material, if they haven't dealt with it. So that could be, if you like, a personal psychic cataclysm it would be handy if people have, you know, are aware of what's going on and are prepared for that in some way.
So what you're talking about is a potential mass release of DMT in our brains and mass collective consciousness kind of ascension.
Yeah, I mean, this idea was put by a friend of mine to Rick Strassman himself, and he actually said he'd been nursing a theory along these lines for some years, and his version of it was that by some environmental trigger, something would happen whereby some codon on would be carried by a common cold virus or something like this, which would trigger everybody at the same time. But what I didn't say earlier was that the circumstantial evidence that the actual galactic alignment itself may have an effect comes from two separate sources, one of which is Simon Schnoll, who was doing work about 30 or more years ago as a student. He was working with biochemical reaction rates and radioactive decay rates, and he did more and more experiments, and you should get a smooth bell curve if the more experiments you do, according to his professor. But in fact, he was getting spikes on the graph the more experiments he did, and he couldn't understand it. And the professor just said, don't worry about it. But over the years, in his spare time, he did more and more experiments, collected the database. When computers were available, he was able to work on that database and realised that two of the major spikes he were getting related to a sidereal year and a sidereal day. So that is a day in relation to the stars and a year in relation to the stars. In other words, something, some energy affects our internal chemistry, neurochemistry, biochemistry, and it works via our relationship to the stars. All the stars we can see are in our own galaxy, so our relationship to the Milky Way can somehow affect our own internal chemistry. That is one point. And the other one is that a guy called James Spottiswood was doing research on ESP, and he found that when the galactic center was on the horizon, that there was a huge jump in people's ESP abilities. So as soon as it popped up over the horizon, people's ESP abilities sort of multiplied. And so that implies that there's some effect from the actual, from our alignment to the actual galactic center area itself, that somehow might improve our psychic abilities.
Wilcock talks about this too. David Wilcock, he was saying that at like 2 a.m. inside the real time, our ESP abilities improve for an hour and a half or something like that.
Right, that is from the same research as Spottiswood. In fact, I think I got that information from Wilcock. He's brought a lot of these obscure bits of scientific research into the light of day, and a good man for that.
Okay, so you picture, more than anything else, an evolution of consciousness triggered by some event, some obscure event, maybe DMT releasing in our brains, maybe something else, some alignment with the universe. We don't quite know why, but there's hopefully an evolution of consciousness. But do you also see cataclysm as playing a role in this 2012 scenario? Do you see the Earth changes and this happening as well?
Well, I do. If you look at all the people that have had near-death experiences, they virtually all say there is, going up to 2012, there will be an increase in Earth changes. And if you look at what's already been happening in the world, we have had an increase in the incidence of hurricanes and earthquakes, volcanoes. There is evidence that we're in the middle of that already. It's not sort of saying on 21st of December 2012, the world's going to explode, which is what people like to make this into, but just that we're, the way McKenna actually had a good metaphor for this, which was, if an alien came round the corner and saw a woman giving birth, he'd think she was in the throes of a terrible agonising death and metastasising a huge tumour. In fact, the reverse would be true, because she's giving birth, that is the main event, although there may be some nasty side effects, and in some cases those side effects can get way out of control and kill the child or the mother. This is where we have to have some input and try and have some contingency plans to stop things getting too bad. And all the indigenous people are saying that we can actually help things here, and that the actual Earth changes are more severe if we don't actually get involved and try and cut down on pollution and all that sort of thing. Because we're in a situation now where we're getting towards the point which Laszlo's called the trigger point, I think, something, or the chaos point, where actually the system gets very, very unstable, and it will either go down to breakdown or breakthrough. And so that's where all the unsustainable things that we have an input into in the world suddenly reach this point where everything's going to either get better or get worse, and that's where it's down to us, you see.
Has he mapped that to 2012?
He did, yeah, apparently independently.
Well, yeah. Okay, so you see us in a window of Earth changes at the moment. You see these kind of cataclysmic things going on at the moment. We're seeing more seeing global warming and hurricanes and earthquakes and whatever.
Mm.
You don't see a specific on the day 21st December 2012 big cataclysmic event happening. That's not.
No, I mean originally I saw this as a window event of several years, and I do, in some ways I still do, because I think it's an event that's already started. We're in the build up. I think that the Maya have used that date as a focus point, but I mean, I would be very surprised if anything happens on that day. I mean, when I found out about all the near-death people and the other people coming back from altered states, specifically mentioning that year, and I thought there must be something, some very big focus point to this process that occurs in that year, which should, after that point, be recognisable. So, if you take the whole year of 2012, I would expect, you know, the major developments to happen in that year. Yeah.
And so, do you include in that the consciousness change? I mean, this idea of a kind of a mass ascension through DMT rush or something like that, putting our brains, is that
okay.
A moment, a trigger snap, or is that a window?
I like to, my favourite, you know, because having been given an overview of all this material, I don't have my own personal theory to push, really. So I'm quite open to chuck things out if more information comes in. But currently my favourite explanation is the Alexei Dmitriev explanation, because it seems to, not only does it cover most of the information, but it also coincides with what the near-death experiences are saying very, very accurately. What Dmitriev says is that these changes are not just happening on Earth. Basically, they're throughout the whole solar system. We're getting atmospheric and magnetic changes. Uranus and Neptune have got 50-degree change to their magnetic fields. So it seems that the more extreme changes are happening first on the outer reaches of the solar system. And he said that there's a huge 1,000% build-up of interstellar plasma on the edge of the heliosphere, where the solar system goes through interstellar space. So he's saying that build-up of plasma is probably because the solar system is going into a cloud of plasma that is bleeding through and changing all the atmospherics and magnetics on the planets throughout the whole solar system. But he said that this is not just about changing the Earth's environment physically, but he says it's going to cause us to, quote, a mass spontaneous evolution of mankind. He sees it as being the trigger, the plasma as the trigger to a change in consciousness.
So what, would that happen in an instant, or would that be a couple of days or weeks or months or years?
He saw this as, I think... Well, he thinks that the magnetic reversal, he also thinks it's going to cause a magnetic reversal of the Earth. He thinks that's already started, because plasma would feed in at the magnetic poles for a start, where you've got the northern and the southern lights there. That's where the magnetic effects would feed in. It says there's a huge increase of plasma spheres in our atmosphere, which he's done a separate study on. But yes, he thinks it's going to switch the Earth's poles. It could be that it will interact with us, because the Russians have also found that we have a plasma body, an actual independent sort of plasma sheath that corresponds possibly to the etheric body in esoteric texts. But it could be that is what will be affected by the influx of plasma into the atmosphere. Of course, we now have a big split in the Earth's magnetic field, I think. Which will probably, let more of this stuff in. But where I go for the timing guide is because it correlates so well to what Dmitry said, is Daniel Brinkley's near-death experience vision. Brinkley was hit by a bolt of lightning in 1975. He was out. He shot out of his body straight away, and in the ambulance, his heart stopped, and he was going down a tunnel. His heart was stopped for 28 minutes. He went down a tunnel into a bright light, and he then had a life recall experience, and then he was given 300 prophecies from the future, where he was taken into scenes from the future, and sort of living them. Of those, 117 were major world events, including Chernobyl and the fall of the Berlin Wall. And by 2002, I think it was, there was only about 17 of them left to come true. And they basically culminated around 2014. It said the Earth changes will keep going on, getting more extreme, especially between 2011 and 2012. And that at that time there would be the arrival of a form of energy which has not existed in this part of the galaxy for a long time. That would cause an evolutionary opportunity for mankind, and then between 2012 and 2014 a magnetic reversal. So I see the whole process as culminating really by the end of 2014, because his description is so similar to Dmitriev's scientific explanation of what's going on, and he gives us more of a time scale on it.
So he's talking about after 2012 things happening. How about the Mayan? Do they say, okay, we've got all this stuff happening, and then 2012, we've got the death and rebirth, perhaps. Did they say anything about after 2012?
There's only one inscription. I mean, a lot of people don't even like to admit that there's one inscription, but there is one inscription that dates something after 2012. It's at Palenque. And basically, it is a case of the king of Palenque. Possibly, it's thought by some miners, this just come out in the last couple of months, that he may have done this in response to the king of Tortuguero, who referred himself to 2012 as a sort of the way they big themselves up to an event in the future by the something about the date when they're born or when they're crowned, you know, when they accede to the throne. If there's a repetition in the date somewhere in the future, they say a reference to this future, a Bacton endpoint, somehow improves their status. So they think that Pacal might have tried to outdo the Tortuguero king by putting a date further into the future to refer himself to, you know. But it's about, it's basically the end of the Picton, which is, now we're at the end of the 13th Bacton. If you go into the extension of the calendar, which they used only for, this is getting into another controversial calendar area, but basically the way I see it is they used the 13 Bacton cycle for measuring anything below 5,125 years, 5,200 tuns. If they want to talk about mythical time that goes beyond that boundary, they would then use bigger cycles which go to huge lengths. And there's a 20 Bacton cycle called a Picton. Well, Pacal referred himself to the end of the Picton, which is about 4,472, I think, in AD, something like that.
So it's not, the Mayan calendar itself doesn't necessarily end on 2012. There is continuing time.
No, I mean, the implication is that there is a sixth era. If you go to the Hopis, for example, they have seven eras, and we're in the fourth, approaching the fifth. Okay. They're worlds, world eras, or worlds, they call them. And they see them as a birth, interestingly, like a birth process, which is a rebirth and an upgrade for mankind each time. It all fits in very well.
So it's not the end of the world, it's just the next
no.
step. It's the
and
next
I think whatever's happening has happened before, except that we have, you know, each time it's like a spiral. You go up one step. So, I mean, it could be we're going on to the next level. In the Peruvian myth, it's the beginning of the next level of mankind, which some of them are calling Homo Luminous, you know, with a visible shining aura. This is what's coming out of Peru in their prophecies, that around 2012 you'll get the first examples of this person emerging.
So we've got to take the Mayan prophecy seriously, because we've seen from their last ages that ended, we've seen geological evidence that something happened, and they're talking about the galactic alignment, and we've seen with our science that it's true, we are going to be in the centre of the galaxy at this point. I mean, and they've got an inscription, so we can take them seriously. The I Ching, that's another thing that, you know, it's something for us to think about. We know about the sunspot cycle culminating in 2012. We know about the Hopi prophecy. Is there anything else that we really need to take seriously, something that maybe people don't know about? Is there any other kind of prophecy or scientific evidence or anything that we need to specifically look at and be aware of?
I think we've covered my favourites, if you like. Yeah. Always be open to more, because we just don't know it all. This is the thing. There's always more information coming in, and the more people that are looking into us, the more likely we are to get that information.
Okay. Well.